How to Beat a Child the Right and Proper Way by Colin Channa. Good evening, fellow classmates. I'm very pleased to appear before you to present my 5-minute how-to speech in Speech 112 this evening. I know many of you had a long day at work, so I'm going to be brief and to the point. I had a day off today, but that don't mean I should just go on and on because my energy is up. By the way, Professor, we could open the door. These trailers hot like jail. And while you're doing that, can I ask you to give me a little break if I go over 5 minutes, please? I have a lot on my brain tonight. You're shaking your head. Consider it a graduation present. After this semester, you won't have to see old Sislin again. You're smiling now. You look a devil, you. You smile just like my youngest son. So, fellow classmates, I need to explain something to you before I start. If you notice, I don't have any cue cards. What happened is that today I changed what I had planned to talk about. So what I did the cue cards for don't really make sense again. So, as the young people say, I'm going to do it on the fly. So let me start again. I'm very pleased to appear before you to present my 5-minute how-to speech in Speech 112 this evening. I know many of you had a long day at work today, so I'm going to be brief and to the point. My speech this evening is called How to Beat a Child the Right and Proper Way. And the reason I decided to speak on this topic is based on the fact of something I saw today that reminded me of something that took place on a Tuesday night in Jamaica 34 years ago. In 1972, some of you not even born yet. Anyway, today when I was in a Duane Reade on Broadway over by Wall Street, buying some pantyhose and some chocolate for my grandchildren, I saw this child of about 17 back answering her mother. Everything the mother say, the child back answer. You know how these children nowadays can go on. Just rude. When the mother talking to her, you know what she doing? Popping her bubble gum and rolling her eye. She fold her arms and shaking her leg. And sometimes when the mother say something serious to her, she look at her and laugh. The child just rude, you know, and out of order. Anything the mother says, she contradict her. If the mother say A, she say B. But anyway, I wasn't really paying them any mind, you know, because I'm not a person that like to put myself in people's business. Plus, I was in a mood where not a thing was going to bother me, because I was coming from a luncheon for my daughter, Karen, and I can't really remember the place. Fancy place, though. When you walk in there, you see class. What it name again? It has a name like a person. But for the life of me, I can't remember what. Fancy name, though. French. But anyway, a lovely place though, down Wall Street with plenty columns and chandeliers. Her office give her a big honor today. That's why you see me dress up like this, with my hat like I'm going to church. Because you know me, I'm simple. I don't like fuss. But anyway, when I reach the register now, the mother and the daughter come up behind me. And the arguing was still going on. Just blow, 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 blow. And the mother and daughter back and forth. And my poor ears couldn't eat grass. So when I shift through all the blow, 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 I pick out that little girl, get into bad company. She won't do her schoolwork or go to school. And the mother went up to her school to talk to the guidance counselor. And the little girl tell her off in front of the guidance counselor, the principal, and the English teacher. Denounce the mother and call her all kind of names. So this is what the mother was trying to talk to her about in the pharmacy now when the argument starts. Some things the little girl tell her mother couldn't even say in class. No child supposed to say those things to your mother. When you look at the little girl, you know you can see that deep down she's a nice little child. But nothing more than she feels she big now because she turned 17, so her mother mustn't say nothing to her. When I tell you, nice looking girl too, you know, small in body, but you can see she have nice shape. She have hips, and her hair is so tall and nice. Tall down almost to her bottom. And when you talk about wavy and tick, Lord, and don't talk about shine. And to top it off, she have beauty spot on her cheek beside her nose. Have an Italian look. pretty girl in her green plaid uniform. So you know the mother spending money to send her to good Catholic school. But just out of order. Just out of order. Out of order. And rude. Just calling her mother stupid and denouncing her how she don't know anything and shouting after how when anything happen, she always take the guidance counselor and the teacher's side. When I see she say that, you know what happened? I feel like turn round to her and say, whose side she supposed to take? She's your mother. But I keep my mouth shut. So anyway, I couldn't get the little girl and her mother out of my mind, even after I leave Duane Reade. But I had a lot of time before class, so I went to get my exercise, you know, walk around. That is how I keep myself fit, you know. I like to walk. That's how come I don't move from 135 from I come to this country. I lose a little of the height, though. You know the bones and age. But I born with height to give away. By the way, when I say I like to walk, that don't mean I like to walk any and anywhere, you know. I don't like to walk in parks and all that kind of thing. I like to walk in Manhattan. I like to walk in the city. While I'm walking, if I see anything for my children or my grandchildren, I can stop and pick it up. Or if I want some tea or something to eat, like for instance, if I get some gas, I can stop and take my time, then start to walk again. Plus, when I watch New York 1, I hear about too much woman who get raped off while they're exercising in the park in the broad daylight. I don't know why they bother go and tempt fate for. You think it yesterday man like to rape woman in bush? So you notice now and going to go out and run beside the bushes with your legs exposed in shorts? Listen to me. I never once hear about a woman getting raped in front of a Rockefeller Center at 12:30. So what that tell you? Stay with the crowd. So anyway, Wall Street is one of the areas where I like to walk. Down there is like England to me. You have little streets and your old white buildings, and almost everything you want to shop for you can get down there. Plus, it's an orderly place. It's a business place. Down there, you don't have nobody running up and down like they wild. Take, for instance, Times Square or further down where I work in Herald Square. Too much wildness up there, man. Too much young people idling with no ambition, nothing to do. Just running about the place and talking loud. If they bounce you by accident, they wouldn't even say, excuse me. And when they ask you a question, it's like they don't know the word please. But sometimes you can't really blame them. When children come like that, it's the parents' fault. Speaking of fault, you know if they don't organize a luncheon for me at Macy's, it's my fault. As I mentioned Herald Square, I remember that this month make it 30 years since they took me on. If they know what I know, they better have a luncheon for me like my daughter office had for her this afternoon. Even if it's just accounting alone, or is hell to pay. But anyway, when I say I couldn't get the girl and her mother out of my mind, it was the mother I couldn't forget, in truth. And when I walk about two blocks, I start to hear a voice telling me to turn back. And I kept telling the voice, that is not my business. But the voice wouldn't stop. And all the fight I keep fighting it, you know what I do? I spin round and turn back down to Duane Reade. The way I was stepping down Broadway, people must think I was mad. Because you know how down there stay, everybody moving like they have battery or somebody wind them up. Just voom, 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 voom. Worse is summer. All the tourists them come make the place more packed. And they don't know how to walk. So imagine my dilemma now. You know how the sidewalks down there stay. Hardly two people can pass. And is me going one way and is them coming the other way. And is me boring through and is them getting mad. But I don't care because I had to talk to that mother. I had to talk to her. Because when I take a stock, I realized that her hands were so full, she don't know what to do. And let me tell you, oh boy, you see, my daughter Karen, who I went to the luncheon for, she might be a senior vice president at J.P. Morgan Chase, no, but don't think it did always look like she was going to turn out the right and proper way. At one time, it looked like she was heading for the gutter fast, but you know what saved her? I, as mother, did what I had to do. Because let me tell you something, you know. Once they go past a certain point, these children don't think it easy to bring them back. When certain kind of rudeness come, you have to nip it in the bud. When they want to spring up like they fertilize themselves and act like they're big, but you know for a fact they're small, don't wilt in front of them. Stand up firm. Hold your ground. Push them back. Sink them down again below the grass and stand up over them like you have a machete in your hand. If they push up their head again before their time, don't hesitate. Take one swing and chop it off. So anyway, when I reach by this big store here, the one where you can buy everything from clothes to luggage, but your mind always tell you to really look upon the label good, Century 21. I take a glimpse of two of them, and I stop to focus. And you know what? It was the two of them in truth. When I almost reach them now, I call out to the mother. I say, "Excuse me, miss, you were in Duane Reade." I could touch her on her shoulder, but I don't like to touch people in this place. Since 9/11, especially downside, everybody get extra jumpy, my dear. Next thing you know, touch somebody and they turn around and think it's terrorists and shoot you. So when I call her now, the mother stop and look at me and say, "Yes, is something wrong?" She must be see a little thing in my face. Because I'm a person like this, you know. I can't play hypocrite. And I can't take hypocritical people. I'm like Flip Wilson. What's your name again? Geraldine. Don't you cry and don't you fret, because what you see is what you get. Anyway, the mother had a tan coat that catch her to her knee. Not a dark tan, but more like, you know, those Clark shoes. Same color as these chairs you are sitting on. It was a spring coat with a belt round the waist, and from what I can see, I know her dress was not in good condition, because now is May, and is just too hot for that. Plus, she didn't polish her shoes, some $20 pumps, and the shoes itself was lean. So when I see that now, I say to myself, "Dear God, imagine this woman sacrifice for this child so much, and this child treat her like dog mess. The parents who do the most get the least thanks." Breeze was blowing, and like they don't have the World Trade Center again, it was coming right through. Whoosh, from over the West Side Highway. I had to turn my back and take off my glasses before it blow off. For if it blow off, is me saying one have to run it down. And next thing, dirt blow into me eye and blind me. You're laughing? But it's true. You can't take chance again, you know. Not when you're old. I accept that fact. When the breeze start, I say to myself, glasses, hat, and frock. You wondering why I say frock? People nowadays would scrutinize you same way, no matter how old you are. So anyway, I ease over underneath one of the awnings down by Century 21, and the mother and the daughter follow me. And when I straighten out myself now, I say to the little girl, "Sweetheart, I overhear you and Duane Reade. Why you talk to your mother like that? I can't see you're a nice girl from a decent home. Look how your mother work and send you to school, eh? And look how your uniform neat and nice. But why you speak to mommy like that? You're not to do that, sweetheart. When you talk to mommy like that, you will make her feel embarrassed, like she don't train you at home." That little wretch. You think she pay me any mind? No, sir. She take her mother's hand and say, "Come on, ma, let's go." But it's like what I say. Give the mother a little chups strength, and she pull her hand away from the girl and wipe her face. But still yet, when she talk to me, her voice sound like she can't mash ants. "Hear her. She going through a very hard time." So I say to her, "Ma'am, I understand. But you're her mother. No matter what she going through, you must know she can't talk to you like that." When I say that no, you know what the little girl do? She fold her arms and whisper, "Mind your heffin' business." You, believe me, you. She didn't say heffin'. She said the actual word. When she said this to me and done, she turned to her mother and say in a kind of tired voice, like she's the one supposed to be frustrated, "Let's go." Then she swing herself and walk off. And believe you me, the mother was going to follow her. When I see that, you see, I grab onto her hand and say, "Don't follow her up. Don't follow her up. Make she gone. Make she gone. If you follow her up, all you're going to do is make she think she can lead you. Don't make that child lead you like you have chain on. You're a woman. She's a child." Now you could see the mother know it was sense I was talking, you know. but she's so accustomed to making the child treat her like a little puppy that she starts to whimper now. Jessica, Jessica, Jesse, Jesse, come here, come here. And you know, the little demon never even looked back at her mother and say, yes, dog. When the daughter passed and gone round the corner now, I take my other hand and turn the mother face to me. I look at her and say to her softly, because I knew she was feeling the pain. Look here, miss. I know how you feel, but never mind, never mind. I go through the same thing already. She has money to go home. She shake her head and say yes. She normally go to school by herself. Yes. And come home by herself. Yes. So let her go on then. Let her go on. Don't follow her up. She cover her face and start to bawl loud, loud now. You could stay across the street and hear. So I put my arm around her like she's my friend long time and hush her. And as I was hushing her now, she started to tell me how the girl was a nice, nice girl until she turned 17 last year. After that, she don't know why, but the girl started to follow some friends into a bad crowd. And now she want everything to be her way. And she not studying her books. She didn't exactly say bad crowd, but that is what I pick from it. I know how to pick things out, you know, and how to make sense of nonsense. If you ever hear how much money that mother spent on psychologists and how she wasted guidance counselor time when all she had to do was what she as a mother was supposed to do. But I know why she didn't do her duty. She freed. Anyway, I listening to her now, I realized that when I thought she and her daughter was Italian, I was wrong. To tell you the truth, I can't tell you exactly what she was, but she no Italian. She looked Italianish though. And she had a funny accent. But Italians in the 40s not coming to America again. Like one time. You could tell how her accent tick and that she didn't live in America long. Plus, I know Italians. I live with them. When I just come to America in 1976, is mostly Italian used to live near me, you know. That was up in the Bronx, up by Boston Road and Eastchester Road, there at 3678 Corsa Avenue, the first house I own in this place. Serious as judge, you might see mostly West Indians up there now, though. I hear a lot of Hispanics moving in. Lord Jesus. But it was pure Italian up there in my time. Even now, out in Long Island, where I live now, guess what? I buck up against Italian again. It's like they love me. Perillo one side, Moretti next side, Polish in the back. So, when I say the woman was an Italian, I knew what I'm talking about. But you could tell she was some kind of cousin to them, though. Something from round that side. I'm not so good with the European setup, so I can't tell you where exact. But don't mean I don't know the continent, though, you know. My son Andrew, the one who followed Karen, the bond lawyer, he must be sent me over there about 6 or 7 times already. Everything first class. But I didn't go where used to be the communist part. And I think she's from that. Listen to me. Communism come in like germs, you know. When you think it gone, it come right back and hold you. And when you think you have the medicine, it change up on you. It evolve. Look at Russia. They say they're free, but it's communism still. Can you imagine if I go make my son pay for me to go over there and something happened to me, can't come back? What would I tell Mr. Macy's Monday morning? 30 years at Herald Square and never miss a day. Never been late. Perfect record. 30 years. That's why I can do as I do up there. They don't bother me. You know why? I'm a dedicated, disciplined worker. And these days, especially, when workers like to jump from place to place, you can't beat that. So anyway, as I said, that wasn't no Italian. But Italian was never the point. Here was a mother in distress. And this was a distress that touched something in my mind. As it touched me now, I told the woman that I went through the same thing with my daughter, Karen, who is older than her. That woman, as I said, was in her 40s. Karen must be 50 now, for I'm 68. You see, when they get like that and you try with them, I said to her, and you keep on trying with them, and they're still not hearing. There's only one thing left to do. You have to beat their ass. Don't make America turn you into any fool. You don't come from here. As there is a God in heaven, when children, especially girls, start to act a certain way, like they is equal to you, you have to put them in their place. And don't make them or anybody else frighten you about police and child welfare and all of that. If you know exactly how to beat a child, call the police. You're mad after what they get from you? They wouldn't dare. When the woman ran off screaming down the street, a voice said to me that maybe I didn't really bring my point across. Maybe I didn't fully explain the whole thing with the police. So I start to think how, when you look at the state of young people in this country today, there's a lot of parents who could benefit from knowing how to grow the children right. What to do when they start to bend away from how they brought them up. How to grab a hold of them and straighten them out. So it's this voice and this incident, my fellow classmates, that made me change my speech from how to make a budget and stick to it to one more beneficial to the world these days. How to beat a child the right and proper way. By the way, Professor, I see you're giving me the signal that I'm over my time, but I should point out to you that neither Singh nor Avila nor Cumberbatch are here this evening to give their presentation, so you might as well give me their time. And look, see, everyone agree. Why you think they're clapping for? So, Professor Hansen and considerate classmates, to understand why I behaved the way I did today, you have to understand a little bit about my life. I was born in Jamaica in 1938, and although you mightn't believe, when I was coming up, I was very poor. My mother and father had 8 of us. My father was a postman, and my mother used to work in a sweetie factory, making lollipops and bubble gum. When you have those kinds of work in Jamaica, especially in those days, things was very hard. It's not like up here, where if you're a postman, you can live a decent life. Down there, they used to pay the postman like he was a child riding a bicycle, and all they had to do was give him pocket change. But he used to have to pedal round the city in the heat and pounds of mail. So when you see me now, don't grudge me. I'm coming from very far. Now, the house where I grew up was at 2A Sanders Lane in East Kingston. It was a broad house, a rent house. It was smaller than the trailer here. By the way, Professor, I can't take this room. It makes me feel like I'm waiting for bail. Anyway, all of us live in the one-room house. But you know something? We keep it clean. There was about 6 houses in the yard and only one pipe outside by a mango tree where everybody have to go and brush their teeth and bathe. And one kitchen, too, where everybody go and cook. Although sometimes you used to just catch up off wood or fire and cook your food on that. I'm the last of all the 8, and I watch all my brothers and sisters turn 12, and my parents take them out of school, send them to a person in the area to learn a trade. But I didn't want a trade. I wanted a profession. From I was small, I want to be something important in life. I don't know where the ambition come from, but that is what I have inside me from a born. But anyway, it didn't look like life was going to work out like I want. Although teacher said I had the brain in primary school, my parents didn't have money to pay for the exam to pass and go to high school. And even if I did pass the exam, who was going to pay for the uniform and the books? Plus, you know something? My parents never even think it was important. None of them never go to high school yet, and none of them never know nobody that went to high school either. But for me to go and learn a trade like making hats or sewing clothes was a normal thing. To cut a long story short, I got to go to high school, but not the whole entire time. My bigger brother, Ezroy, was 12 years older than me, and he used to be a mechanic for the railway until a diesel engine dropped on him and crushed him up in 1953. Well, he used to like to gamble a lot, but he used to lose all his money because he was a dunce. So when it was coming up to exam time, I went down the train yard by West Street and tell him that I can help him to win. He asked me how, and I explained to him that the crown and anchor and most of those games with dice use things from maths, and I know my maths very well. He didn't believe me at first, so I took him down to the market where some men had their board set up. It was a Friday evening, and everybody get them pay, and the crowd was big. All the women had their baskets with their yam and banana and their fruits out on the sidewalk. And when you walk, you have to make sure you watch where you put your foot. For if you step in somebody's basket and knock over them things, is war. So I tell Ezroy I need to watch how the dice playing for the first 20 throws. And when I finish now, I take him one side and tell him how to bet. But only in him head. I tell him not to put down any money. Afterward, I tell him one side and ask him how much money him bet in his mind, and him tell me. Then I ask him how much money him make in his mind, and him tell me too. Then I ask him if him ever win money like that before, and him say no. Then I say to him, in time to bet with the real live thing, but first we have to make a deal. The first set of winnings have to go to me because I need to pay for some exams. So that is how I get to go to high school. Ezroy. He paid all my fees until he died. That school doesn't exist anymore. Salem College was the name. When Ezroy died, I had to leave the school at 14 with no trade now and go and look for work. By the second week, I get a job at National Tanning Industries, which make handbags and shoes. But believe you me, I only spent 5 years on the factory floor before I got an office job. All the while I was stitching bags and shoes, I used to put away a little money to take some correspondence course. In those days, high school exams in Jamaica used to come from England, from University of Cambridge. But if you didn't go to high school, you could still study and pass, because they had schools up there that would stay from there and teach you too, as so long as you have the money and the time. So one day, I see an advertisement for one of them in the paper, and I write to them, and going back and forth and back and forth is how I passed 6 subjects in senior Cambridge by myself. To tell you the truth, I didn't pass English, but I get distinction for maths. When I get my results, I go to work extra early the next morning and wait for Mr. Parnell, rest in peace, who used to own the place. Mr. Parnell was an Englishman, and you know how they're strict already. So I make sure I put myself together spick and span. And when I see him step out of his mom, Blue Cortina, I go up to him and show him the paper with the passes I got. He said, Miss Thompson, congratulations. I'm so proud of you. I hope you keep it up. Well, one thing I used to love about Mr. Parnell is that he knew every worker by face and name. And let me tell you, today I know every single person who work at Herald Square. Anyway, I said, I don't have any more to keep up, sir. I pass my subjects now. What I want is to apply for an office job, but I know the people who work up there won't give me a chance because I work in the plant and I'm not fair-skinned. Not that I'd try, but they wouldn't even let me see an application if I asked them. I know how to stay, but I know you as a fair man, Mr. Parnell, so I come to talk to you. Mr. Parnell's face turned red and then him start to laugh, but him wasn't laughing at me. I just catch him by surprise. He said to me, Miss Thompson, we're looking for somebody in bookkeeping, but we need experience, so we don't have anything for you up there right now. But keep up the good work, okay? I said, Mr. Parnell, as long as it have to do with math, I can do it. Just let me watch somebody do it for a week. When that week done, I want you to give me a test. I don't want anybody else to give it to me. I want you, because they will sabotage me, because they don't want all like me to work up there because my skin too dark. Mr. Parnell kind of hold down him head and mumble. What I pick out of the mumbling was, what you're saying is true, it's not right, but I understand. But if I fail the test, I said to him, then I don't want to work here anymore, because I can't pass subjects like this and be sewing handbag and know that certain people working in the office and they only pass worm. So that is how I end up doing accounts until now. By the time I was already married and Karen was already born, my husband was a soldier man. Dalton was his name. And basically, we get married because I got myself in trouble. Stupid man, stupid. Lose my focus. Get my priorities out of line. Marriage? I wasn't ready for that. But that became my lot in life because I made a bad mistake. And even though it was a big mistake, I wasn't going to add to it by disgracing myself and my family by bringing no bastard child. It was a stupid reason, I agree, but I was only 18, and that is how it went in those days. Plus, I had the example of my mother, who was a missus. She wasn't any common law wife or concubine. Suffice to say, the marriage didn't work. My husband was an alcoholic. But I have to say he didn't used to womanize. And by the time I left him in 1968, I had 3 children to care for. Karen and Andrew were 3 years apart. Roger came 4 years behind. When I left my husband, I didn't take anything. I just leave everything because I couldn't stand arguing anymore. Next thing, I say I want to take something, and him say it should stay. And it boil into a fuss and get loud like a market. And this is just a big disgrace. Plus, whoever leave a marriage should prepare to leave everything behind. Hopefully it won't come to that. Hopefully you can work it out. But if it's not working out, make up your mind before that. You won't make things like furniture and all that hold you back. When you got to go, you got to go. When I was walking out that house, which was at 1C Dennery Road, I made 3 promises to God. 1, I wasn't coming back. 2, I was going to buy my own house very soon with only my name on it. And 3, all my 3 children was going to reach further than me in life. So it meant I had to take a second job. By the time I had to beat my child the right and proper way, it was 1972. And I was heading up accounts at the plant, which was down on Foreshore Road. They rename it Marcus Garvey Drive later on. A hectic area near the wharf. In fact, the plant was in the same compound as the wharf. For most of those shoes we used to make was to export. A lot of other factories were around or nearby, down on Spanish Town Road. Beer, rum, tiles, paper, ice cream, mattress, cornmeal, ice. The plant was also near to a little airstrip. In fact, sometimes I used to look out my window and see eye to eye with some of those guys who used to fly those little planes. No exaggeration. Wave to them sometimes. Sometimes when I'm feeling mischievous, I used to even blow them a little kiss. And when I was bored or tired, sometimes I used to stand up by the window and watch the harbor pilots use the tugboats to guide in those big cargo ships coming from all across the world. If you doubt me, you have to remember that my office was 3rd floor, upstairs, and most of the buildings was lower than us. Mostly 1-story and 2-story, so we in the office could see everything. Sometimes we used to watch the white seabirds, them just glide in and perch on the big red cranes they used to use to take the cargo from the ship. And you know what we do sometimes? Gamble. In fact, we used to gamble nearly every day. Not for any big money or anything, but like for who going by who lunch. Well, you know that as the boss, I was the bookie. I used to give them the odds. How many birds was going to perch on a crane in a half hour? If a crane was full of birds, which bird was going to be the next one to leave? Yes, man, I was the house. And you know why? The house always win. And I don't like lose. I was born to lose in life, but I find a way to win. So I'm not going back to lose again. We had moved up to Havendale by that time, far from where we used to live in Dennery Road. We lived in range between Havendale and Dennery Road. Havendale and those places was like night and day. Only new style house was up in Havendale, and the area was not like how I hear it turn out. A place where any and anybody can live. In those days, is only bank manager and people like that used to live up there. Lawyer, doctor, politician, business people. Is only people like that could afford to buy the lot. If you have a teacher or a nurse up there, it was because their husband was something else. No, sir. They couldn't afford to live up there without help. How it went is that you had to buy the lot and get a contractor to build your house how you want it. But you had 3 or 4 that used to do most people's house. You don't have those type of house in New York, so I can't give you an example for you to see what I'm talking about. You have to go to the older parts of Florida to see what I'm talking about. Solid concrete house with steel bar inside. And even Florida not building house like that again. As soon as a storm lick Florida, boof, all the new house then blow down. Frame house, all they do is clap some piece of cheap board together and disguise a pretty look around it. And people buy them for they look nice. In Jamaica, though, frame house is what we make to keep chicken round the back, fowl coop. So anyway, we reach Havendale now. Everything behind us, progress, time. Every time I think about house, is like water want to come to my eye. It was the first house I owned. When you talk about landscape and space, my lot was a 1/2 acre, and you still had some bigger than mine. And when everybody used to keep up their lawn, they line it round with flower beds and plant the croton and bougainvillea hedge beside the fence. To tell you how the land was big, when we moved there, Roger, my last boy, was 11 years old, and he couldn't throw a tennis ball to reach his brother on the back porch from down by the back fence. But to be honest, it was hard to keep up. We were the only house I knew that didn't have mother and father there, and I didn't want anybody to think of my children as less, because, let's be frank, I was a divorcee, worse, without the schooling or the color like them. So although the two-job thing was tiring, I used to keep it up. I used to drop the children to school every morning and pick them up every evening in the blue cantina I buy from Mr. Parnell for a very good price. I'll never forget the license plate, R7255. Boy, that Mr. Parnell. When I was thinking how to buy the house, I went to him and he lent me $5,000 to put on what I had saved up myself. And we shake on it to say I'll pay him back little over time. No paperwork. You know why? I was a dedicated worker, and although I had the chance, I never thief. So anyway, when I picking up the children is really on my lunch time because school's used to over between 1 and 1:30. What I used to do is pick them up, bring them home, and leave them with Miss Noddy, the helper who used to live in, then go back to the plant. When I leave the plant at 5 o'clock, I used to batter with the traffic all the way from the waterfront to New Kingston, which was brand new those days, to my second job in the office at Pegasus Hotel. That hotel is still there. Still nice, tall, and broad like a big domino, blue on the front and white on the sides. But it look a little different now because the golf course across the street, they turn it into a park. I don't know why that make it look different, but it's true. You still have all the flags in front of it, so it still look official. But without the golf, a little bit of something gone. I used to work at the Pegasus till midnight every night, then drive home alone to 64 Border Avenue. When I reach, I barely had the strength to eat a little dinner. I used to heat it up myself. I never used to bother wake Miss Noddy. I wasn't like some people who used to bother their helper whatever hour they come in. Some people never have no conscience, you know. After I eat and done now, I used to bait off the day and go to sleep for a few hours to start all over again. But in truth, the first thing I used to do when I go home wasn't eat. Every night I come home, I used to make a little beeline to the children's room to leave a Cadbury chocolate for them in their bed. Each one like a different kind. Roger now like dairy milk, Andrew like whole nut, and Miss Karen like fruit and nut. And if I even mix them up, you see they used to tease me and laugh and play all kind of joke like bring me a slice of cheese if I ask for a slice of bread. Then when they see the look on my face, they used to just bust out and laugh. In truth, we used to have a lot of fun. Those were very good times. On Saturdays now, I used to drop Karen down at the Singer store in Tropical Plaza for her sewing lessons, then take the boys to the YMCA because they used to like to swim. Then, while the children at their lessons, I used to go up to the Pegasus and do any work left over from the week. If I had the time or the feeling, I would go up to the doctor's compound at the university where I had a doctor friend. This would only happen sometimes. I didn't want nobody spreading rumors. And rumors was easy to start because in Jamaica those days you didn't have a lot of cars. So everybody know is whose car can park up at your gate. And they used to watch and see for how long. Plus, that kind of friendship wasn't very important to me. That kind of friendship will distract you. And the next thing you know, you start to put man before your children. Listen to me. When you decide to go it alone, you have to go it alone. When the children get big now and gone, you can think about yourself, but when they're small, you have to be responsible. Next thing, you bring in man on them, and you think the man is the greatest thing on earth, and when you hear from the shout, as soon as you turn your back, the man taking all kind of step with your girl child, or next thing, your son can't get on with him, and that meant the boy can't concentrate on school work, and you get an escape now. The boy go turn Rasta and start smoke ganja and get worthless. I see it happen. Is not guess a guessing. I'm telling you from experience.
I given you fox.
Anyway, when I pick them up after their lessons now, I used to take them for lunch at the hotel. After all, children should be exposed. And when they finish with their lunch, they used to do their homework in the office with me. Then all of us would go home. If not, we'd most times stop off for a movie at premiere. When you have to be moving like that every day, everything has to come on the same time. So I trained the children a certain way. I made them understand certain things. And one of them is that when I'm ready to pick them up, they must be ready for me. Every school in Jamaica has a big tree where children wait for their parents in the afternoon. And all three of my children went to different schools. So if one of them late, it makes the next one late and so on down the line. When they're late, then I'm late. And although Mr. Parnell liked me, he was an Englishman, and English people worship time. Liver damage killed the children's father 2 years after I left the house at Durnery Road. So all I'm thinking every day is that there's no one to look after the children if I lose my little work. They had uncles and aunties, yes, but they couldn't do more than take care of the children themselves. So anyway, this is how the story really starts. One evening, when Karen was about 16, I went to pick her up at school, and she wasn't underneath her tree.
I nearly went mad.
When I really looked under the tree, I saw a girl that looked like she could be in her class. And I say, could, because I was too busy working to go to any PTA. So in reality, I used to hear the children calling various names at home, but I didn't know who was who. Plus, when I used to pick up the kids in the evenings, I only used to have a little time. So it was open and shut. Open car door, jump in fast, shut car door, and drive. So I clap and point to call the girl. None of the boys didn't know her name. And she told me that Karen was gone with Claudia de Mercado to Woolworths in Mall Plaza to window shop and walk up and down and flirt with boys. When I hear that, I thought I was going to go out of my mind. No, the girl didn't exactly say what they gone to Mall Plaza to do, but that is what I pick from it. You see, although my mother wasn't an educated woman, she had a lot of common sense. And from I was a little girl, I used to hear her say that you have certain signs that would tell you if a girl going to grow up and behave like a prostitute. And it's not just because she's my mother why I agree with her. I take my own two eyes and see it, so I take it as truth. Take what I say and mark it. Write it down if you want. You ready? Here we go. Any girl that liked to walk up and down from store to store after school instead of going home to study because her eyes are in love with pretty things, and any girl who like to pluck her eyebrows so she can look like big woman when she is still a child, and any girl who like to sing in the shower like she want the whole world to get excited that she naked in there, you take it from me, Cicelyn Thompson, that girl is going to be a prostitute. She have a whoring nature. She have certain intentions in the back of her mind. Now, you might say I'm being harsh or that a girl might have inclinations, but that don't mean they have to come to light. You listen to me right now. You have grown men who could see these things in young girls before the girls see it themselves. And these men used to make it a point of duty to go up to the plazas and prey on aimless girls. Friend them up, buy jumbo malt for them at Woolworths, and soon after that, they start to give them little things, little earrings, little chaparitas, and tell them to tell their mother and father a lie that the school friend gave them for their birthday. Then after that, now, they start to give them car drive. Pocket money come later. Then when the child least expects it, they start to pressure her for sex. And 9 times out of 10, they give in. Now you use your own brain and sift what I just tell you before you answer. If a girl sleep with a man because him give her things and money, is not a prostitute that? Yes, Professor, I see you giving me the signal again. But I can't stop now. I have to go on. Bear with me. Bear with me now. This thing is too important. Way beyond this class. My fellow classmates, that girl, that Karen, went to the plazas with Claudia De Mercado. Used to pluck out her eyebrows till all she leave back was a line. At the age of 16, that girl already had a dirty reputation. She was, excuse me,
a damn mattress.
I used to say to Karen when she used to ask if she could shave her eyebrows, "That look good to you? That look good? What sense to leave that line for? Then I might as well just finish and done and just shave it off. What? Do I need a Parisian mustache?" I used to talk to Karen about Claudia De Mercado all the time because she was always asking Karen to ask me if she could spend a weekend at her house. Her people was real money people. They used to own in bond stores and gas stations and car distributorships where they used to live and had everything from pool to tennis court. And as far as I knew, people with that kind of money never really like people black like me, especially when they think they're white. So whenever Karen asked me if she could go up there, I used to tell her no. Any parent who allow their 16-year-old daughter to do her eyebrow like that is not responsible. They're slack, and a slack parent make all kind of slack things go on in their house. Next thing you know, they're allowing Claudia to drink and have boys come in there and all those kind of things. Listen, man, let me tell you something. Boyfriend and that kind of thing couldn't work in my house. Boyfriend? For a girl in school?